It is time for Gaza Corner. As many of you are aware, I was away for quite a while, both going to Israel and Palestine and also to the WOMEX Music Conference in Budapest. And I, last week, did not talk about my own observations of the trip to Palestine. So I want to touch on that now. I'm only going to give myself, you know, a little over 10 minutes or so to do it. So we'll be doing this for the next several weeks on Gaza Corner, unless some news really trumps everything. But there's so much to talk about, especially when I was there, which was during the violent period. So I'll just, you know, touch on a few things every week, and also we'll play a lot of music following Gaza Corner tonight, particularly having to do with the benefit I'm producing on Saturday, December 4th. Go to tangents.com to learn about it. But it's a benefit for the Edward Said National Conservatory of Music featuring the canoonist Ali Amer. I've received a lot of emails from concerned Tangents listeners over the last several weeks about my safety and how unfortunate my timing was when I arrived at the outset of the worst violence in many years throughout Israel, especially Jerusalem, and throughout the occupied territories. And this was my very first visit. But I look at it the other way. I believe it was better for me to be there at a time of unrest so I could more keenly observe what was going on. Let me be clear. I was not on the front lines of the violence. I was not in harm's way. I did not travel to the Palestinian-administered West Bank or to Gaza. I wanted to go to Ramallah in the West Bank, where I had a number of contacts, but they got consumed by, understandably, by more urgent matters. I could talk for hours about my experiences, and I will go into more detail in the upcoming weeks, especially during these Gaza Corner segments. And at the benefit, I also will talk about my trip as well. For this Gaza Corner, I'll touch on some of my own observations and give a little history as well, followed by music by Ali Amer, as well as the Oriental Music Ensemble, which is kind of the house band of the Edward Said National Conservatory of Music. My first two nights, I stayed with a Palestinian family near the largest Arab city inside Israel called al-Fahem. And I also stayed a couple of nights in Jaffa, or as in Arabic they say, Yaffa. In Hebrew they say Yafo, and we Americans say Jaffa. But the majority of my time was spent in Jerusalem, both in West Jerusalem, where the Jews live, and also in the Old City. I stayed in the Christian quarter. Many Palestinians live there and work there. The Old City accommodation was partially arranged by a Tangents listener, and also the founder of the Aswad Ensemble, Nabila Mangos. And Nabila, thank you so, so much. Before visiting Israel, I did not grasp how segregated the country is. Outside of Jaffa, and perhaps to a lesser extent, Haifa, most of Israel appears completely segregated. Not only that, but after having in-depth conversations with Israeli Jews who I met along the way, I was stunned by how few of them had ever met or even had a conversation with a Palestinian. Outside of activists and musicians, virtually none of the Israelis I spoke with had ever met a Palestinian. Let that sink in for a moment. It's far easier to dehumanize people when you've never met them, especially in a climate in Israel where politicians and much of the media encourage dehumanization. I enjoyed my time in Jaffa, which is, again, one city where Jews and Arabs coexist, but it's important to have historical background on Jaffa. Let me quote a brief excerpt from the Washington Report on Middle Eastern Affairs, which is a magazine published by American Educational Trust, or AET. It's WRMEA.org. Quote, on May 13th, 1948, the day before Israel's creation, the all-Arab seaside city Jaffa surrendered to Jewish forces. It was the largest Arab city in Palestine. And under the UN partition plan, it was to have been part of a Palestinian state. But Menachem Begin's terrorist, and that's their words, Menachem Begin's terrorist Irgun group, which I'll add a couple of things, which is, this is the group that was infamous for the 1946 King David hotel bombing on the British administrative headquarters for Palestine that killed 91 people, also responsible for the massacre of women, children, and elderly men at the Palestinian village of Deir Yassin on April 9th, 1948. But getting back to the excerpt, it says, but Menachem Begin's terrorist Irgun group began bombarding civilian sectors of Jaffa on April 25th, 1948, terrifying the inhabitants into panicky flight. At the time, the city's normal population of around 75,000 was already down to 55,000. On the day of surrender, less than 3 weeks later, only about 4,500 remained. The rest of Jaffa's citizens fled their homes in terror, becoming part of the more than 750,000 Palestinian refugees created by the war. Although Arab armies from neighboring countries did not enter Palestine until May 15th, Jewish forces had been active in a campaign of ethnic cleansing since passage of the partition plan the previous November 29th, unquote. In my opinion, the biggest reason for instability in the Middle East can be traced to the permanent class of Palestinian refugees that was brutally displaced during the 1947-48 period. It's impossible to understand the roots of the Israeli-Palestinian conflict without knowing its history, especially the facts concerning the creation of Israel. There are so many books, so many places you can go online. Let me throw one at you. An online source called ifamericansknew.org, ifamericansknew.org. Check it out. The atmosphere in Jaffa for me was a welcome relief from Jerusalem, where I stayed for most of my trip. Jerusalem, especially West Jerusalem, from what I observed, is a sick, socially diseased city, driven by fear, driven by ignorance, driven by paranoia. While the media in Israel, and I assume the states as well, but I wasn't focusing on the media in the United States when I was away, but the media in Israel was fixated on the terrible stabbings of Israelis, just plastered the front page day after day after day. I did not find media coverage of the unarmed Palestinians and others posing no threat that were killed by Israeli soldiers and civilians in what has been described as extrajudicial killings, or I think it's fair to call summary executions. The mantra in Jerusalem is shoot first and ask questions later. 2 minutes from where I stayed in the old city, if you know the Christian quarter, it was right by the Jaffa Gate, I was told that two elderly Palestinians were stabbed, fortunately not critically, by an Israeli. Soldiers apprehended the man, and I'm told, let him go. One thing is certain. If it had been a Palestinian stabbing an Israeli, the Palestinian would have been shot and killed on the spot. And because of Israel's belief in collective punishment, the family of Palestinian attackers have their homes demolished. Israel also started a policy of banning alleged Palestinian attackers and their relatives from occupied East Jerusalem. Israeli Justice Minister Ayelet Shaked, who's a member of the ultra-nationalist Jewish Home Party, announced that alleged attackers and their, quote, supportive, unquote, family members would be stripped of their Jerusalem residency rights and social security. Meanwhile, Israeli Jews, shoot and stab with impunity. Israeli attackers know they are not at risk of being shot by Israeli security. No Israeli who commits an attack on a Palestinian will have their home demolished or their rights renounced. This is one example of apartheid, discrimination on grounds of race. Laws applied unequally based on whether you're, in this case, an Arab or Jew. More so than South Africa, what comes to mind for me is the Jim Crow South, where segregation ruled and whites were free to lynch blacks with impunity. When the violence erupted in Jerusalem, the mayor encouraged its Jewish residents to carry guns. In fact, gun ownership laws were relaxed, so Jews in Jerusalem can now easily buy them. I saw so many guns in Jerusalem, it made my head spin. If you check the Tangents webpage in the far right-hand column, or if you check tonight's playlist, I think Harry will put the photo, it's there already, you'll see a photo I took of my train neighbor during a 1.5-hour ride from Akka to Tel Aviv. He was an off-duty member of Yasham, which is a special patrol unit. He had pistols bulging out of his back pockets and an M16 in his arms at all times. I started to talk to him and asked if he would mind if I took his photo, and he said he would because when he's on duty, he's masked. So he didn't want his face exposed. But we talked. It was an hour and a half, and we got friendly. And he allowed me to take his photo, not realizing that his face was fully reflected in the window. You can look at the photo. He also told me his work involved infiltrating Arab protests, wearing his mask, and having his gun ready if Palestinians got out of hand. The distorted mainstream media coverage may have given the impression that Israelis were the primary victims of the violence throughout October and into November. This is not true. During October, according to the Mayan news agency, 10 Israelis were stabbed to death and 69 Palestinians killed in the same time frame, and these numbers have increased since then. A significant percentage of the 69 Palestinians were either killed during protests or turned out to be unarmed or did not pose a lethal threat. Additionally, 3 died from tear gas inhalation, including a 9-month-old Palestinian baby from Bethlehem. And 2 Palestinians died after the Israeli army blocked their access to a hospital for treatment. 1 Palestinian died due to medical negligence in an Israeli jail. A spokesperson for the Palestinian Red Cross said the total injured during October was over 8,200 Palestinians. I tried to look up Israeli Jewish casualties, and the best I could do was Al Jazeera reporting 83 as of October 24th. Posted at the Tangents website in the far right-hand column is a press release from the human rights organization B'Tselem that discusses the extrajudicial killing of Palestinian suspects, or what I earlier referred to as the shoot first, ask questions later policy. It's a press release worth reading and signed by many human rights organizations. I'll stop here because I don't talk for too long, and I'll resume next week as I plan for the next several Gaza Corners to be about my experiences and also various interviews that I'll share with you.